In a previous commentary on China, I started with the rather obvious point, often neglected, that China is run by the Communist Party of China. And the way the Communist Party sees the world is run by China is in terms of historical progress that's outlined first in Marx and second in Lenin. And right now they see themselves living through the period described by Lenin in his Imperialism, the Last Stage of Capitalism, which in simple English means they intend to rule the world, and they don't intend to be nice to anyone. Where that takes you in terms of their bargaining position is that they will only do things in terms of negotiation, particularly in terms of international negotiations, not because they are attempting to establish trust or be generous to anybody, but because they have to for structural reasons in their own economy. And what the tentative agreement with China and Donald Trump emphasizes, there are two structural problems, short-term structural problems in the Chinese economy, which the Chinese leadership is attempting to address. One of those is in the food market and the problem with food inflation, and the other of those is in the capital market. The increasing problem that China will have in financing its current account. I'll deal with food first because food is the most internally politically sensitive. Variation in food prices have historically had enormous impact on the political stability of China. We go back some decades to the events that never happened in Tiananmen Square in 1988. We find that those events were driven by very rapid food price acceleration, which in turn generated political instability, which generated the problems of that time. And what we've got in China at the moment is we've got the beginning of a possible circumstance like that forming in what's happening in pork prices. So the Chinese pork swine herd, which is enormously large, many millions of animals, has been affected by African swine fever, which has meant that there has to be enormous amount of the Chinese swine herd destroyed, and that means the domestic population of pork, domestic production of pork is therefore fallen. Now, the problem about this is the effect that that's had on prices and consumer price inflation. Pork prices domestically in China to the last available month are up by 75% in the last year. And that's introduced an acceleration of food prices of 45%. Now, these are very dramatic accelerations of food prices. And the result of that is to bring overall inflation to 3%, which relative to the levels of inflation this century is pretty high. It's towards the upper end of the range. Now, core inflation is only 1.5%, which goes to show that it's not an industrial problem. But if you've got one of the major areas which causes domestic inflation, let's say pork prices going up by 75%, you've got a real problem. And you've got a problem which is, generates potential political instability. So what you've got to do is you've got to launch a program of dramatically accelerating the rebuilding of that swine herd, and that means that you need to find an awful lot of grain to do that. And the number one grain exporter in the world, which you would go to solve that problem, is the United States, which produces the largest world's largest production of soybeans and the world's largest production of feed grains. And as a result of that, part one of stage one of the potential agreement between China and Trump includes the importing by China of $40 to $50 billion of feed grains. Now, historically, the largest ever year for China buying American feed grains, which is in 2013, in which they bought $29 billion. So this is, they're proposing to buy more than, well, not quite twice as much, but close to twice as much as the previous record high. But that's absolutely necessary for them to do that, to rebuild their domestic swine herd if they're going to get pork prices down and if they're going to not have this risk of political stability. The second thing that China has proposed to do is open up the capital market to US financial companies. And the reason that's happening and the reason they're forced to do that can be seen in the outlook for both Chinese budget balance and the Chinese current account balance that's shown within the International Monetary Fund Outlook database, which was in the data which was released in recent days. And there's much been discussed in Australia in terms of the Australian influence on that. But what it shows is that is a change in the structure of Chinese growth. I've said previously that China has moved from being a primarily industrial country to now a primarily service economy. And the problem with that is that as services rise as a proportion of Chinese GDP and manufacturing falls as a proportion of Chinese GDP, it is still manufacturing which generates most of the export income. So what that means is that the increasing growth in services is generating increasing internal demand for imports, but your ability to produce exports to counterbalance that is declining. And so the result of that is that the current account surplus, and there was a time in, say, 2006 when there's a very large current account surplus of several percent of GDP or more that China had with the rest of the world, that has almost completely disappeared. And the estimates by the International Monetary Fund is the surplus this year is 1% of GDP, and next year it'll be less than 0.7% of GDP. A worse problem, though, than that is the lack of capital inflow into China. Because what was previously happening was the way the Chinese economy was developing was by migration of particularly US firms into China. And that was because US firms could take their capital, both intellectual and financial, and move to China and set up manufacturing concerns to sell their products back to the United States. But this negotiation that Trump has entered into has stopped that process dead. And if you're in a country which is going to have increasing current account problems, you've got to get capital inflow to balance your increasing demand for foreign imports. And if you're not getting the migration of capital, then you have to go to the world capital market, which means you have to open up the Chinese capital market. Now, there are endless risks about that for any foreign firm going into that market in terms of the domestic potential instability of the Chinese capital market, but I'll talk about that another time. So where the bottom line here is the Chinese are only offering these concessions because they have to. They have to import more grain because they've got a problem with domestic food prices, a dramatic problem with pork prices. And they have to solve that problem, and that they will have an increasing problem financing their current account, and therefore they need to open up the capital market so they can begin to import capital. Neither of those things are because they wanted to, both of them are because they have to.